Hey, all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at LibertyStickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at LibertyStickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else is stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show today is probably the bravest man in Texas, if you ask me, and I ain't met all the Texans, but god dang, this guy just blows me away. Antonio Buehler, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks a lot.
Well, the reason I call you that is because I saw footage of you in a cop's face, sticking your finger right in his face and calling him a effing coward, which is exactly what you're the opposite of. And man, that's something else. And well, first of all, before we get into all the everything, tell us, what is the Peaceful Streets Project?
Well, the Peaceful Streets Project is a grassroots activist effort with the goal of engaging in nonviolent, non-political direct action to try to change the culture of society so that people stand up for their rights, they stand up for the rights of other people, and they force law enforcement to modify their behavior so that they don't abuse the people.
Yeah. And so basically you're just following them around with cameras mostly and making them aware that they're being watched, little brothers watching back, right?
Yeah, that's part of it. It's perhaps our most overt and obvious tactic, but we also do Know Your Rights trainings where we teach people what their rights are and how to flex them and how to get out of bad situations with cops. We also do police abuse complaint departments where we give people a platform to share their stories of abuse. And we do an annual summit where we bring people from around the country to talk about police abuse, to give them tactics to take back home, and to rally people within a community so that they can stand up to the police. Because individually, you know, the police can crush any one of us, and they've done that throughout history. But if we can come together as a community and reject the institution and show them that we're not going to back down and allow them to walk all over us, then we actually have a chance to erode the police state.
Yeah, right on. Well, and you know, I got to say, man, for anybody to go following cops around with cameras, I mean, the rights training, all that is important, but for anybody to go following cops around with cameras the way that you do, that's brave, man, because that's the kind of thing that, you know, cops murder people every day for fun, just, you know, whatever, and there's no accountability, and they know that there's hardly any accountability other than what you're doing. So, you know, and I know you're taking a serious risk doing what you're doing, and I'm proud of you for it. I think it's absolutely incredible, and I think that the chilling effect on the APD, for example, I wouldn't know how to measure it, but it's got to be powerful. They're scared to death of you, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's manifested itself in several ways. At first, they thought that they could just bully us and to get rid of us, and so they arrested me a couple times for filming them. Mm-hmm. They arrested some other members in our groups. They became very aggressive, pushing us around, shining flashlights in our faces when we were trying to film them. And when that didn't work, then they issued press conferences. They had press conferences where they complained about us filming them. And when that didn't work, then they started issuing veiled threats of violence against us. And now that's not working. So now they're trying to disrupt our police accountability summit, and they're putting pressure on venues not to host us, and they're setting up their own free to the public events on the same day to try to take people away from our events, and they're putting a lot of money into local media to try to, you know, keep them quiet about what we're doing. But we're winning. People know it. People are sick and tired of the out of control police. And I think the latest killing in Austin, Texas, of an unarmed man who hadn't committed a crime and wasn't being detained, and he was shot once in the back of the neck by an APD officer, the outrage within the community and the lack of the usual cop apologists to make excuses for the criminal cops and try to malign the victims, I think that shows how effective we've been. People are no longer just buying into the false rhetoric about how cops are automatically heroes and that we need them and that we shouldn't shouldn't raise children when they commit crimes.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it's an important thing, because those of us who are hardcore libertarians, you know, we already know this stuff just from being who we are and understanding the anatomy of the state for what it is. But what's happening is people who aren't Republicans, who aren't Democrats, who aren't libertarians, who aren't anything, they're just regular people, they're terrified of the police. And they're sick and tired of it. And then they go, wow, this guy Bueller is showing me the way. There's actually something we can do about this. We can push back against their abuse.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like that's what they fear the most. Because usually when they kill someone or they beat someone or they you know set up someone on false charges and they're caught doing it, they can usually just say, oh, well, that guy was a criminal. He was going to commit a crime. Or, oh, look at his record. He's been arrested 4 times before for possession of marijuana. Or, oh, look, he's an angry black male. Or, you know, oh, he's an immigrant. But with me, they couldn't do that because of my background and the circumstances of my arrest. And all of a sudden, there were a lot of people who were joining the Peaceful Streets Project that were not confined to any particular political ideology, socioeconomic group, racial ethnicity. And all of a sudden, they couldn't push the same sort of PR campaign against us as they could with others. And it does. It scares them to death.
And when you say your background, you're referring to not the fact that you're not black, but the fact that you're an Army veteran.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that came together. And my criminal defense lawyer actually called it the perfect storm, where I was a designated driver that night. I was in a completely different car. I never met the woman, that was getting abused. The only reason I got involved was because they were abusing a woman. They were breaking the law, committing felony acts at that point. I'd never been arrested, never had any issues with the law. I'm a Stanford graduate, a West Point graduate, a war veteran, a teacher. I've been on the board of 2 nonprofits. And I'm not black or Hispanic. I'm not uneducated. And so they couldn't slander me the way that they slandered so many people. And then the best thing about it was witnesses actually stepped forward to say that the cops lied. And one of those witnesses had video. So, it was such a clear case of the cops were acting as criminal thugs and they refused to back down and people just saw right through it. And, the police just didn't want to admit, okay, we screwed up, we were wrong, let's drop charges. They continued to push. I still have 5 charges out against me. They're all misdemeanors, but I still have these charges out against me. They refused to punish this cop. In fact, they gave this cop, Patrick Aborski, their Hero of the Year award. And they've exposed themselves. And my case and what the Peaceful Streets Project has been doing has been for anyone who's willing to step back and just look at it and just, like, dispense with the notion that cops are automatically heroes, they can just see through it right away. And again, it just scares them to death that people are waking up to this notion that these guys aren't necessarily our friends and they're certainly not protecting us.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's like Anthony Gregory wrote this thing for the Mises Institute website back a few years ago against police socialism, where he's pointing out this is just another monopoly government program. Why would we expect them to do any better at their job than housing and urban development does at their job or any of these other guys or any private company that somehow was able to wrangle a monopoly through state power, like the old AT&T, right, where they charge you through the nose to call one county next door and whatever. And the service is terrible. And a monopoly is a monopoly. And so why should it be that the APDs, why would anyone expect the APD to consider their job protecting and serving the public when their job is protecting and serving their monopoly on being the police?
Yeah, and this is something that certainly transcends, you know, political ideologies as well. There's a lot of positions that libertarians take which conservatives or liberals automatically reject. We need national defense but we need social programs. And with the police, it's something where the rich people know that they don't need them. They don't want them in their neighborhoods. In fact, they usually get private security. Conservatives think that they're wasteful. They spend a ton of money. liberals know that they abuse people's rights and that they're only concerned about protecting the municipal government and the corporations that that they're in bed with. I mean, this is something that we have the ability to change the way society looks at law enforcement in a way that can transcend political boundaries so that the only people who really rally behind the police are the people who are employed by the police, the municipal government workers, and the corporations that are in bed with the government. And while they are quite powerful and they certainly have a lot of our money to play with, as far as the percentage of the population, they're tiny. And, this is something that we can actually win and get a lot of people to wake up to.
Yeah. Well, you know, I saw on Twitter this morning there's a piece in The Nation magazine that says a black man, an unarmed black man, is killed on average of once every 28 hours in this country by, as they put it, a cop, a security guard, or a vigilante. What they meant to say was, by a cop. Give me a break. Like security guards and vigilantes are out killing black men every 28 hours. It's the police.
Yeah, and when I saw that, I was really disappointed in the way that they wrote the article. And I think that that's a good example of someone who wanted to write a piece which really highlighted the injustice that there is in America, you know, for all of us, but particularly for young black males when it comes to the police. And because of the pressures that they have within their organizations, they said, well, hold on, we can't make this just about the police. So let's throw in these other things, security guards and vigilantes, even though it probably makes up less than 1% of those killings.
Yeah. Less than 1%. I mean, come on. Give me a break here. And, you know, back when I was a cab driver, I remember I had these kids in my cab, and they were like 12, 13 years old. And we were talking about the cops, and this kid, I swear to you, I mean, the kid was maybe just achieved adolescence, you know? And he says, oh, yeah, my grandmama raised me my whole life. That if I'm ever in a car that gets pulled over, to put my hands out the window immediately, both hands. Now, the rest of us are taught, well, put your hands on the steering wheel so uh-huh. that the cops can see them because, you know, they're scared and they're itchy trigger fingers. But no, in Austin, Texas, which is paradise compared to most major cities in the United States as far as peace and security goes, young black children, little boys, are raised from the time they're kindergartners or even younger, that the cops will blow your freaking head off for no reason. Don't give them the slightest excuse because they'll kill you. Can you imagine growing up like that from the time you're a little bitty boy? I mean, I've hated cops since I started dealing with them when I was 11, but that's because I'm a skateboarder and whatever. But up until that point, I was raised to believe that they were my security force, that they loved me, and they were going to take good care of me and all of that crap like everybody else. But for young black kids, they're not raised to believe that, not for one minute, not by anybody who cares about them anyway.
Right, and that's the way it should be. No one should be taught to look to the cops for help and security because that's how you oftentimes get into trouble. But, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. It's been eye-opening to see law enforcement through the eyes of black America because it really is different. And we in white America or, you know, privileged America, whatever you want to call it, it's something that we should pay attention to and we should acknowledge because for two reasons. One is because it's a great injustice. And as libertarians, we should be vehemently opposed to any form of injustice by the state, and this is a pretty big one. But two is, you know, this, while it's historically been focused on black America and homeless people, it's creeping, and Hispanic Americans know what it's like, and now white Americans are going to know what it's like too, and we should learn the lessons from people who come before us.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what about this? You're a war veteran, but how many of these cops are war veterans and are just basically they're just bringing home their Fallujah tour to Austin?
Well, yes, to a degree, I think it's worse than that because I believe that the police view us, we the people, as insurgents. They think that it's a war zone out there and every one of us is seen as a potential insurgent. And the difference between here and Iraq or here in Afghanistan is over there, the soldiers actually have rules of engagement, and they're actually not permitted to shoot civilians unless certain things are met, certain criteria are met. Now, of course, there's abuses to the rules of engagement, but there are rules of engagement over there. Whereas here in the United States, that's not the case. The only rule of engagement is, you know, for the police is shoot whenever you want and then just say that you were scared for your life. You thought the guy was reaching for a gun. You saw a shiny object in his hand. You thought that he was pointing something at you, and then you can shoot. Not even our soldiers in Afghanistan can get away with that kind of, mindless killing. But here in the United States, our law enforcement officials actually have a greater ability to use deadly force against us.
Well, and then, you know, the most recent, I'm talking with Antonio Bueller from PeacefulStreets.com, the Peaceful Streets Project, and we're going to talk all about your summit and your fundraising and all this, but I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the corrupt cop of the month here and the murder of this guy over there on 34th Street. What can you tell us about that story?
Well, I think that this story is one that's played out time and time again, every day in America, to some degree, but this one was pretty telling because of how obviously messed up it was. There was a bank robbery early in the morning at this bank in a nice part of Austin by a tall, heavy-set white guy. So they closed the bank down. That afternoon, a skinny black guy shows up and tries to get in the doors. And he tries to open the door, and he leaves because they're locked. And then he comes back and tries to open them again. Probably confused because he doesn't understand why a bank would be closed during work hours. And so the worker there told the detective that, you know, there was a man out front. The detective went to talk to him. They talked for about 2 minutes, and then this gentleman decides to leave. His name was Larry Eugene Jackson Jr. And a lot of people are like, well, why did he leave? And, you know, the reason he left was because he could. He had every constitutional right to leave. He was not being detained. There was no reason for him to stay. He was allowed to leave. He was allowed to run away if he wanted to. But despite the fact that he was legally allowed to leave and he wasn't being detained, the detective, Charles Kleiner, then went and commandeered a vehicle. Someone was sitting in the car. He told them to go looking for this guy. And if one of them busted, that would be called carjacking. He chased this guy down. The driver of the car had told people that the cop was frantic and out of control. And when they came upon Larry Jackson, he was just walking down the street. He was on the sidewalk. You know, he wasn't running. This detective kind of jumped out of the car.
He wasn't running. He was just walking down 34th.
Right. He was walking, according to the person who was carjacked by this detective. And then this detective chases Jackson underneath the bridge. And the detective claims that there was a struggle, even though he never got any medical attention. And this gentleman was shot once in the back of the neck, one shot to the back of the neck, which, you know, a lot of people would automatically assume seemed like an execution. But that's what happened. And then, of course, APD comes out and they immediately say, don't rush to judgment. Let the process play out. The cop was in fear for his life. And, oh, by the way, we don't want you to rush to judgment on yet another Austin Police Department cop killing an unarmed person who wasn't committing a crime. But let's look at the individual who was killed. Did you know that he was arrested 5 times when he was younger? You know, did you know that he was going to commit a crime? They said that he was going to commit bank fraud. So they're sitting there slandering this person, you know, who hadn't committed a crime and who hadn't been in trouble with the law in ages. And they're trying to paint the picture as, this is a bad person who obviously would have attacked the cop if the cop tried to stop him, and that's one less thug on the street. And that's the way APD always presents it. That's the way cops around the country always present it when they commit these crimes against innocent people. And fortunately, for the first time in a long time, we've seen the response be very, very different than usual. There's a lot more people calling out the police, saying enough is enough. We're sick and tired of hearing about how you guys are always scared, and how, you know, you guys have such a dangerous job, yet you guys are the ones going around killing everyone. And I think that this case with Detective Kleiner. I don't think anything's going to happen to him because nothing ever happens to a criminal cop. But I think this case has the ability to radically change, alter the mindset of so many people to move them away from the automatic defense of criminal cops to one of questioning them and criticism and, you know, demanding answers. And I think that's what we need in order to try to erode the police state that has been built up.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, in this case, it was just so blatant, too. A few points to follow up here. First of all, the thing about the bank fraud. Well, he was going to commit a bank fraud. Really? They didn't, never mind they didn't prove that. They didn't even have a compelling narrative. They didn't even say this was the kind of bank fraud we're sure he was going to commit, right? They just said, well, or else what else was a black guy doing at a bank instead of a money box?
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell is that? I mean, he was going to commit a bank fraud. They didn't even have a story, did they? Did they even try to explain what they meant by that?
No, and their initial statement had nothing to do with that, right? The initial statement, completely overlooked that. And in fact, in their press conference, they said, irrespective of the reasons why he left, you know, and it's like, you know, irrespective of the fact that everything was because this cop chased down this innocent man who had committed no crime, and he clearly wasn't detained, otherwise they would have said it. You know, they want you to forget all that, and now they throw in this hypothetical about what this guy might have done in the future, and they say we are certain that he would have, that he was going to commit bank fraud. It's their way of justifying a murder by one of their cops. You know,
and then they said it was an accident because, you know, sometimes I accidentally pull my revolver, turn off the safety, and shoot somebody in the back of the head.
Yeah, and that's just an example of they will go to any length to defend criminal cops, cover for criminal cops. The thin blue line is what matters. The rights, the liberties, and the lives of the people are nothing to them. They don't care about protecting anyone. If it comes down to an innocent person's life or a potential reprimand of a cop, they will dispense with the innocent person's life in a heartbeat. And I have felt it personally. I have seen it too many times. And every single time someone goes into the automatic defense mode of, well, not all cops are bad. Well, we need cops. Well, they do more good than harm. You know, all they are doing is enabling a system that allows these criminal corrupt cops to destroy the lives of peaceful people who haven't committed any crimes. And we need to get away from that. We need to call out the bad cops. We need to call out the corrupt system. And we need to call out the people who engage in the nonsense arguments, you know, of who try to gloss over the crimes by saying, well, not all cops are bad. Well,
right.
You know,
of course they are. How many
there?
Of the cops who showed up at this obvious second degree murder or whatever arrested the cop who did it? None of them. How many cops have ever showed up at the scene of one cop killed somebody and the other cop goes, oh man, you clearly broke the law here, hands behind your back? Has that ever happened in all of American history?
I seriously doubt it. It may have happened at some point.
And then to listen to the police union rep crying his tears about how dare someone leak the coroner report. Oh, boo-hoo, it's so unfair. Here, let us smear the dead man all damn day, but don't leak the coroner report that describes the bullet wound because that's prejudicial.
Yeah, and, you know, they're hypocrites. And what we have the ability to do is to change the conversation and to lead the talking point and to stop allowing APD and the police union to paint the picture for the public. What we can do is we can paint the picture before that, and we can get people to automatically assume when a cop killed someone or when a cop goes to testify that there's a really good chance that cop is lying and I want to see proof, as opposed to, well, the cops said it, so therefore it must be true.
Yep. Okay, now you got 3.5-4 minutes to tell us all about this summit and how you need to raise some money and how awesome it's going to be and where it's going to be and everything that you can.
Well, this summit is going to be the capstone of our first full year as the Peaceful Streets Project. It's going to be at the AT&T Conference Center on this Saturday, August 17th from 10 to 4 p.m. It's going to
And where is that?
It's on MLK on the south side of UC campus in Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be free to the public, free food, free child care. Everyone should come. We have amazing keynotes to include Bobby Steele, the co-founder of the Black Panther Party, Bradley Balco, who just wrote Rise of the Warrior Cop. He's a writer for Huffington Post, formerly with Reason. We have Carlos Miller, Photography's Not a Crime, Pete Ayer of Cop Block. We have Bea Dolan singing his film The Police Song, Tatiana Moreau singing a People's Street Song. It's going to be an amazing event. It's going to be the biggest police accountability summit the United States has seen in a decade, and it's going to propel this movement forward. We have 15 chapters throughout the country. By the end of 2013, we'll probably have 50. And I want people to be part of this movement and show up to the event. And if they, and whether or not they can attend, so please go to peacefulstreets.com/donate to help us offset the cost of this event that we're giving to the public for free, so that we can pay the venue, pay for the food, and pay for the speakers' fees and travel costs that are associated with it. So go to peacefulstreets.com/donate to give a little bit to help us cover the shortfall, because this is a movement that actually is going to have great impact. This is actually going to be much better money spent than pretty much any political candidate donation that you've ever made.
Yeah, got that right. All right, so how much more money do you need?
We need about $17,000 more to make it work, and I'm working real hard to raise that money. Every single donation counts. Even people who are in a tough spot financially can afford to give $1 to $5. Please go and donate. Every single dollar counts. We need $17,000 to make this event a success and to explode this into a national movement. To take it, to police departments all around the country.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I think this summit could itself be a national news story. This is CNN-worthy type organization, and of course, it's such an important topic, and as we've been talking about, more and more just regular people are starting to see it this very same way, and I don't know if you can really get national TV coverage. I sure hope you can, but this is certainly going to be that big of a deal that it deserves national TV coverage. And I sure hope that people who can afford to help will really go ahead and break out the funds, write a check, peacefulstreets.org/donate, and help Antonio, help the rest of the people organizing this thing to really make this thing huge and to really have that effect.
Yeah, peacefulstreets.com/donate.
Oh, did I say org?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. peacefulstreets.com/donate. Yeah. Okay, perfect. I sure hope I can make it. I'm not exactly sure, but I'm going to do everything I can to see you there, Antonio.
Great. Thank you. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks very much for your time on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, everybody. Sorry I screwed up that web address there. It's peacefulstreets.com/donate. peacefulstreets.com/donate to support the Peaceful Streets Summit on August the 17th, this Saturday.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Are you sick of the neocons and the Israel lobby pretending as though they've earned some kind of monopoly on foreign policy wisdom in Washington, D.C.? These peanut clowns who've never been right about anything? Well, the Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first, and telling the lobby to go take a hike. The empire's bad enough without the neocons making it all about the interests of a foreign state. Help CNI promote peace. Visit their site at councilforthenationalinterest.org and click donate under About Us at the top of the page. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. Hey, you own a business? Maybe you should consider advertising on the show.
See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for thebumpersticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. Thebumpersticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. Thebumpersticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here.